this short paper on fast networks and low-power Memcached. This is joint work with my colleagues at IBM Research Zurich, Animesh Trivedi and Bernhard Metzler. So here's the problem we're looking at in this work. So we all know that key-value stores and low-power CPUs go well together, right? So this is because the workload is typically not very compute-heavy but can be parallelized quite well. So that allows us to operate those key-value stores efficiently on clusters of low-power CPUs where the individual CPUs are running at a rather slow clock frequency. And in the past, there have been excellent systems that demonstrated this. What we're doing in this work is we're looking at Memcached, an example, using it as an example of an in-memory key-value store, and we're looking at the implications of attaching fast 10 gigabit Ethernet network cards to the key-value storage nodes. And these days, 10 gigabit Ethernet is getting a commodity, right? And is not only delivering higher data rates, but it also offers lower latencies, which is, we all know, latency is getting more and more important these days. But the problem here is really like how well the memory nodes driven by those low power CPUs are going to be able to use that fast network. And so we did the following experiment. We ran Memcached on a four-core Intel Xeon machine where we slowly varied the clock frequency from initially 2.3 gigahertz down to 600 megahertz. And we produced the workload by six clients running in a tight loop. And I'm showing two figures here. On the left side, this is a figure from an experiment where we connected the clients with the server using a gigabit Ethernet network. And on the right side, we're using a 10 gigabit Ethernet network. And both figures have the CPU clock frequency on the x-axis. And they show two curves. The green curve is the CPU consumption at the server. And the red curve is the performance in terms of the number of GET operations the Memcached server is processing per second. And as you can see on the left side, the CPU consumption stays, actually it just moderately increases as we move towards slower clock frequencies. And the performance stays pretty much constant, only being limited by the network bandwidth at the server. On the right-hand side, when using 10 gigabit Ethernet, we see that the CPU consumption at the server increases as we move towards slower clock frequencies, and at the same time, the performance decreases, right? And in that experiment, the network is actually never really the bottleneck in the system, but the system is limited, the performance is limited by the high CPU load at the server. And in an ideal situation, what we want is a system that is actually limited by the network bandwidth rather than being limited by the CPU. So, of course, one way to get closer to that point is we could just add more cores to the key value stores, right? And we could parallelize the request over those cores. And we have seen in one of the talks on Monday, on Wednesday, actually, that there's, of course, a limitation in the number of cores Memcached can scale to, but up to that limit, we're probably going to be able to increase the throughput by adding more cores. But adding more cores also means, typically means, more energy that is consumed. And what we actually want is a system that is efficient in how it's processing put-get operations at a very high data rate, even when using comparably low CPU clock frequencies. And in order to build a more efficient system, right, we first got to understand the inefficiencies of the current system. And this table here is a breakdown of the CPU numbers in a Memcached experiment where we were using a CPU clock frequency of 1 gigahertz. And as you can see, the CPU cycles, how they're used up in the system depends very much on the value of the key value pairs that we are reading. And so for instance, for GET requests targeting rather small values of around 1K, in that experiment, around 60% of the CPU consumption is due to various operating system functions that are called, and this is excluding the network stack, the CPU cycles used inside the network stack, but it does account for functions that are called as part of the context switching and so on. And if you look at larger key value pairs of around 100K, then we see that 60% of the CPU, almost 60% of the CPU is actually consumed inside the network stack. And we have a deep breakdown in the paper, and we show that this number is actually, a large part of that is actually due to memory copying. I mean, it's not surprising, but this is just showing that for smaller values, it's a lot of context switching. For larger values, a lot of copying, right? And given those two things, it seems rather promising to use RDMA to actually transfer the key value pairs between the server and the client. And for those RDMA, for those who are not too familiar with the term, is essentially a very efficient way to read and write the remote machine's memory. And it does have some nice properties like zero copy and low latency and so on. That's all great, but the problem is that RDMA typically, I mean, is not widely deployed in data centers. It's used in supercomputers, it's used in high performance clusters, but it's not widely deployed in data centers, and this is because the equipment is still quite a bit more expensive than the regular Ethernet equipment, right? So that's a downside. One alternative is to use a software-based RDMA implementation, which runs on plain Ethernet. And of course, when you do that, you're not going to get any hardware acceleration, right? But you're still going to get the RDMA semantics, which you get through the RDMA API at the application level. And this is particularly true if you use the one-sided operations, which is one way to interface with the RDMA stack. And this is an example on that figure, an example of a one-sided RDMA read operation in Soft IWARP. And Soft IWARP is an open source software-based RDMA stack for Linux, which we are developing at IBM Research Zurich. And the key component in Soft IWARP essentially is a kernel module, right? With which the application is interfacing through a standard RDMA API. And the example is just a simple example where the client is reading a piece of memory from a remote server. And how this works is that first the server and the client, they have to register that piece of memory with the RDMA driver. The driver is going to make sure the memory is pinned, is not swapped out on disk. And by registering the server, the driver would also assign an identifier to that memory region, right? And in RDMA terminology, that identifier is called S-tag. And the client, knowing the S-tag of the server memory, can now go and issue an RDMA read on that memory, and that would instruct the driver at the server side to respond with that piece of memory. And the important aspect here is that the entire data exchange happens without the user space process at the server being scheduled, and it also is happening without any extra copy. So it seems natural, right, to use those one-sided RDMA read operations to implement the memcached get operation. And here's three modifications we propose in the paper to make this happen. The first modification is regarding the memory management in memcached. So memcached has its own memory management where memory is allocated in chunks of different sizes. So what we do is we register those chunks with the RDMA driver as they get created, right? So each chunk gets its own S tag assigned. The second modification is regarding the set operation, which is used to update or create a new key value pair. So if the server gets a set operation for a new key value pair, it would just grab a free chunk, store the key value pair in that chunk, and return back to the client the S tag. Right? If the server receives a set operation to update an existing key value pair, it would also grab a new free chunk. It would store that key value pair in there, and it would instruct the RDMA driver to just swap the S tags underneath. Right? And in both cases, it would go back, it would send back the S tag to the client. The third modification is regarding the get operation. So in that, the client would just first check if he already knows the S tag for the given key and would right away fire an RDMA read on that memory chunk, right? And as he's reading the entire memory chunk, he's got to do the parsing its own, right? So the parsing is actually going to be moved from the server to the client now. If the client doesn't know the S tag. It will just fall back to the regular TCP-based GET operation, and Memcached will make sure that in any case, it would transmit the S tag back to the client so that subsequent calls can be done using RDMA. So this procedure is illustrated in this figure. So to keep it simple, the basic architecture stays with the event dispatcher and the user space threads. But the difference is that in the RDMA architecture, most of the GET requests are actually processed by the soft IVARP driver inside the kernel, and they do not require the memcached process to be scheduled. So we have implemented that architecture and in a standalone prototype using some of memcached's data structures. And we've benchmarked that again on a four-core Intel machine with six clients running in a tight loop. We're using, for those next two experiments I'm showing, we're using a 1.1 gigahertz clock frequency at the server, and we just insert 1,000 key value pairs initially, which are going to be read by the clients uniformly. And we use OProfile to measure the CPU load. That's actually what we're doing for all the figures in the slide deck. And so here we compare the our implementation with the unmodified memcached and in terms of CPU efficiency. The question is how many CPU cycles are necessary to execute one single GET operation. And what you see in the figure, you see two bars for MC refers to the unmodified memcached and MCR refers to our implementation. And you can see on the x-axis is the number of cycles per GET operation. And you can see we always use less cycles throughout the band than memcached. And if you look at the breakdown of the numbers, actually, the interesting thing is that the reason for this is different for small values than it is for larger values. So if for small values, we're more efficient because we're using less cycles in the operating system. And for large values, we're using less cycles in the network stack because of memory copying and so on. So two slides left. Being more efficient essentially means we can do more work with a given set of CPU cycles. And this is manifested in this figure where we compare our implementation with memcached on different number of cores. So we have the number of cores on the x-axis. And on the y-axis, we look at how many GET operations we can process per second. And you can see that we can essentially, with one single core, process as many GET operations as memcached can do with four cores. This is for one particular setting. This might change in different machines, different configurations. But the basic thing statement stays, right? And that brings me to the last slide of this talk. I tried to show that using one-sided RDMA operations can actually allows you to build a more efficient memcached where you get some advantages through the zero copy and avoiding users' context switching. And actually, I haven't talked about this too much, but parsing at the server is moved from the server to the client. And the interesting aspect is that we don't require any special hardware. We can do this entirely in software on any commodity machine. And we think that this architecture is going to be beneficial for any combination of fast, high-throughput storage devices attached to fast networks. So it's probably going to be useful for SSD-based key-value stores as well. And in the future, we're going to look at multi-core aspects in more detail, and of course, latency, which is important. And that brings me to the end. I have put down the website of the soft IVARP open-source implementation in case you're interested. And I'm happy to take questions.